How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. What's up, Uso? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
We got a lot to get through today. New stuff coming out of the Nancy Guthrie and Alec Murtaugh case, and Bob Mott is with us to help break it all down. We'll start with Nancy. She was taken from her Tucson home 5 months ago, in case you've been living under a rock. 84 years old. Just in case. Nancy who? 84 years old. Pulled out in the middle of the night by someone who showed up armed and masked on her own doorbell camera. 50,000 tips, $1 million in reward money. FBI and Pima County Sheriff running parallel investigations, although seemingly at odds a lot of the time. And nobody can name a single suspect. Meanwhile, notes claiming to be from the abductor say Nancy is dead at a completely separate person has been emailing TMZ claiming he has the whole case on a phone, but you need to give me a Bitcoin and I'll tell you where I'm hitting the phone, and the phone's a silver platter, and la da 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 da. We're going to get into all of that today. Like I said, Bob Mana, defense attorney with us, Defense Diaries. You can get his podcast, YouTube, wherever you get podcasts. And of course, Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Start here. 5 months, 50,000 tips, more than $1 million in reward money. The FBI hasn't publicly named a single person of interest yet. A lot of people, Bob, are speculating what's taking so long here. But let's take a look at it from an angle of prosecuting a case like this. You really got to make sure those T's are crossed and those I's are dotted, and not inversely the other way. Do you think that maybe they have some leads back somewhere, and they're making sure that it's going to stand up really good if you're going to get the person arrested and put him in a cell? Or are they just hitting a dead end? From your experience in the legal world, what's your thoughts?
Well, potentially, yes. I think they probably have some leads.
Yeah.
Whether or not they're strong enough to bring a case, because at this point it's a no body case.
Yep.
You know, but look, we've seen the trend in the last couple of decades. No body cases, you know, it used to be the old thing, no body, no crime.
Yep.
Well, that's not the case anymore. They've been trying no body cases and been trying them successfully. So I don't think that's the final impediment. I think it's impediment if they have somebody who maybe checks a few boxes, but we don't want somebody who's checking a few boxes. We want the fucking actual person that did it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like that there's my defense attorney coming out. Like we want to catch the actual perp or perpetrators of this. We don't want somebody that's just somebody that they might be able to cram a square peg into a round hole with, because that's not justice for the Guthrie family. It's certainly not justice for Nancy. So if I think we can all assume, sadly, at this point, that she's no longer with us. So I don't know, man. I tend to think that they probably don't have a real strong lead. You know,
yeah. I mean, it's interesting because there's so many boxes you want to check here, and it's going to be up to the prosecutor in the DA in the case of, okay, this is enough. If they have somebody on their radar before they go and make an arrest or anything like that. If you look at some other cases, sometimes we look at cases and go, Well, my God, you've had a lot. It took you this long to arrest the person, like David, for example, that case, the D4VD. Like, we were talking forever. Like, this is a cornucopia of incriminating shit. But it took them some time to really get there to be sure that, you know, everything completely checked out before they made that arrest. That's a case that's a little more black and white, if you will, or just more direct. There's so much nuance here, so much we don't know how much is actually part of the case, not part of the case, evidence that's actually there, or just nuance. That's got to make it a lot harder from a prosecutorial standpoint to I guess pull the trigger on somebody, but first you got to have somebody to pull the trigger on.
Totally. And look, we know for a fact that they have thoroughly vetted everyone in the inner circle.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Like, everyone in that's where they're starting. Now, those are going to be their strongest leads, and they're going to do all the work necessary in order to check their alibis, vet them completely, and clear them, you know? Yep. So I feel at this point, based on what we know, which is pretty limited, frankly, they've been pretty tight-lipped, you know, we get the occasional little breadcrumb gets dropped for us, but you know, it's really nothing of substance. That I feel like we can feel pretty secure about the fact that it was nobody in the inner circle, and that it was nobody that the inner circle hired, unless they were, you know, excellent at hiding the paper trail, you know, I mean, because it's the paper trail where you're always going to be able to kind of get those murder for hire type things. And then again, you're looking at, you know, what's the motive there, you know, and obviously the motive is usually money. So I mean, it's a perplexing case in the sense that if it was random, you know, they might never get anybody. Mm-hmm. But why would it have been random? Like, I love your theory, like you and Robin's theory that they were.
Gem? Yeah, there was a neighbor. It's simple.
It's as plausible as anything else I've heard.
It keeps it simple because you got to match it to what you see and what you know. And when you look at Porch Guy, you're like, this is not a complex operation. And people keep wanting to make it complex because it's because there's so much air to fill the gaps with because no one's saying much, which means they're either doing a really good job of keeping their lips shut or there's really nothing to go on. And circling back, you know, so using our conjecture and saying they'll eventually get someone, I'm really curious about this, Bob. I know Nanos's department is leading the investigation, we think, because that's what they're saying. Do you think this is going to ultimately then be prosecuted at the state level or a federal level? And regardless of that, throw on top of that, they get someone and say they got a lot on him. Say he's got a cell phone on him, and maybe even confesses on that cell phone, does something, gets a lot of digital footprint, you know, best case scenario. How hard is it going to be for either state or federal to prosecute him, given all the missteps that they've had on the on collecting evidence, Nanos' statements, all these things?
I think my inkling would be that it would go federal. I hope that the feds are still involved more than Pima is, just because of competency issues. And if with the kidnapping, you know, you've got the ability to be able to charge federally for sure, based on what we know. You know, obviously, if the investigation is, you know, got some issues, I mean, I'm feeling more comfortable putting feds on the stand than I am Pima County on the stand. You know, like from a defense attorney's perspective, if you're like, okay, I'm going to give you a choice of two agencies to choose from to be able to cross-examine and hammer away at their investigation. So I'm going to give you Pima County Sheriff's Department or the FBI. I'm picking Pima County Sheriff's Department all day. You know what I'm saying? I mean, like, there's just a cornucopia of things that we could point out that just weren't done properly, at least at this distance. You know what I'm saying? So you would hope that it would go federal, but...
Who makes that call?
As you see with Luigi Mangione, they both made the call.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, I mean, right.
It's like,
but that's when they're cooperating, you know. But since it looks like, you know, so say it's what we have the conjecture on the outside is that Pima County and the feds aren't getting along super well and cooperating as well as they might otherwise be. And so say you have a situation where people really aren't talking, they don't want to agree on anyone. Who does it stay with Pima County then if they don't want to release it? Is that, do they have the right to hold it?
I mean, right. It's their jurisdiction.
I mean, even if it's federal, though, even if there's federal crimes involved.
I think that Pima can't stop them if there's been federal crimes that have been violated. Then
right.
you have a Luigi, like, because I don't know how well the agencies work together in Luigi Mangione.
Yeah.
You know, like, we don't. And we had multiple agencies involved there.
Yeah, and multiple states,
know?
Too. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. You know what I mean? So
at the end of the day here, I mean, they'll call local, they'll call Pima County officers to the stand if we ever get to a trial somewhere. They're going to call Pima. They're going to call feds. They're going to call them both to this. So it's like an and or of who's going to be able to be called to the stand if they're in part of the investigation into this case. So there's a harsh reality here that whoever they find and blame for this, and maybe is the person who does it, whoever they get, you're going to have Nanos on the stand at some point. And you're going to have a defense attorney. I mean, my God, that's a horror story no matter what with Nanos on the stand.
You might not have Nanos on the stand.
You don't think that the defense would call Nanos on the stand no matter what? Just to
what, their own witness? Just to, like, you can't.
Just because he seems like he'd be an easy one to trip up. See, to get very, to say shit that's going to point to reasonable doubt.
You can't call your own witness simply to impeach him. It's not allowed. So,
well,
like,
it's not the intent. I mean, I think it would just naturally happen.
I mean, it's hard because it's a direct examination. You know what I'm saying? It changes the dynamic of it.
But why wouldn't you call the sheriff up for this if you're prosecuting this case or if you're defending this case? Why? I mean, certainly, I mean, prosecutorial wise, I could see why you wouldn't want to, but Do you see a world where they wouldn't put Nanos on the stand? Really?
I mean, how often do you?
It's not
see,
the investigator.
Like, think about this. Think about any case that you're dealing with, and a lot of cases that we cover, you have sheriff departments, and it's pretty rare to see the actual elected sheriff.
Right.
Okay.
To be the one that's testifying. It's going to be the guys that were and gals that were out there doing the work. You know, that were actually conducting the investigation. He's the overseer. You know what I'm saying? That's not to say that there's not some connective tissue to where there's not some relevance to get him on the stand. But, you know, when you're nitpicking at an investigation, you're doing exactly that. And what are you getting from him if it's a situation where you're attacking collection or, you know, things that they didn't do specifically that he had no hand in actually doing himself? You know what I'm saying? So I hear what you're saying. Like, he's for the defense. He's a tasty character.
He's a delicious, delicacy
character. Yeah. I'd say probably the only thing they call him on is that, as I'm going through my mind too, and I completely agree, Bob, you know, they're going to call the investigators, the interviewers, the people actually doing the investigation. He's like their public affairs front man for it, which you wouldn't call. Right. Unless, do you see any way they'd call him because he might be in charge of the training that they received when it came to evidence collection or something like that?
If that's the case, then I suppose so. But I don't.
It's
think
a stretch. That. Yeah, I know. I'm with you. It's a stretch.
He's not training anybody.
But he seems so well trained. He really goes by the book.
But
so
I say that because it's actually the sheriff that actually allocates the funds for training, says what training they should get, and also so here's actually as I'm thinking about it live, could they call him and have him testify as to why he removed a certain investigator from a spot? In other words, he had senior people, again, pure conjecture, what we heard on the outside, you know, removing a senior investigator, putting a junior investigator in charge of this. Could he be called to answer to why he had the personnel shifts and changes he had that impacted the investigation?
I mean, who's calling him? Is it the defense? Because remember, I don't want to, in terms of direct examining him, it's a much different beast than being able to cross examine him. You would go up there as not a friendly witness, and he knows that you're up there not his buddy. right? You're going to be trying to extract information that's not helpful to the prosecution from him. So he would be a combative witness. I don't know that he would rise to the level of, you know, you being able to get the judge to say, okay, well, he's hostile. You know, I want to be able to cross him. Like, I don't know that you'd be able to get there with that. So, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, it's kind of got the feeling of the way that we were talking about the Moscow police before the Koberger arrest.
Yeah.
You know, and I like think back to that, harken back, like, let's pull up some coverage from the shit talking that was going on about those guys, that they're over their skis. I mean, you had the families screaming at them. Everyone was going at them. Again, we'll find out if there ever is an arrest. I mean, you know, every crime doesn't get solved. That's fact.
No. Yeah. You know,
I mean, that is just fact.
Do you think, I mean, not that it's up to him if he's going to testify or anything like that, but I mean, just put his ego into the mix of all of this here. I feel, I mean, my conjecture is this is a guy who's going to be itching to testify for whoever he needs to, just because he wants to be in the public and he likes to spout. I mean, he thinks he's doing the right thing. He thinks he's arguing for his side, but so many times he just puts his foot in his mouth, but then he goes, that was delicious. And doesn't seem to notice while the rest of the world goes, what the hell was that? I mean, I don't know. It'll be very fascinating. I really appreciate kind of like showing the other side of that. Cause to me as a layperson, I go, well, why wouldn't he? That does make sense. Why? Maybe he won't. It's something certainly to consider. Let's talk about the notes for a second. Obviously there's the first two that have been talked about endlessly, initially in IP, saying we want a couple millions in Bitcoin. And then a little bit later, another from the same IP saying she's dead. Sorry, in so many words, not asking for more Bitcoin. And then that kind of ends from that IP. Then you have this conglomerate of emails that TMZ is getting that Harvey's talking about all the time, claiming that, oh, that they didn't do it, but they have information. They know where she is. They have video. They have images on a secret phone that's hidden somewhere. And if you give us one Bitcoin, 60 grand about, depending on the day of the week, then we'll tell you where to find that phone. And that phone's going to tell you everything you need to know. But they're not going to give you any proof that they have any of it whatsoever. These are, I don't believe they're the same people by any stretch of the imagination.
From Algeria.
Yeah, I mean, so there are the two sets. I don't want to converge to the two as so many do because it is confusing, but they are not the same. They are not the same IP. There's no one that can clearly say these two are truly connected. There's not anything that points to it. In fact, it points opposite. When you go back to the originals, though, Bob, I mean, it's really isn't much of a legal question, just more of a conjecture, your opinion from watching this question as a human. What's your take? I mean, the idea that a kidnapper asks for the Bitcoin, that seems somewhat realistic, but then she's dead. Sorry, we don't need any money.
Right, yeah.
What the hell is that? I mean, does that tell you right away that first demand came from someone who really didn't have her to begin with? But why send anything? Why even put any other communication into the ether? Every time you cast that line out there, there's some sort of chance you could be found out. Why risk it? Why even say it? Or did they suddenly have a moment of moral clarity, or is it all just bunk?
It smells a lot like, and I'm no profiler. Our brother here, Robin Dreek, is going to be far closer to that than I would be. To me, it smells like a mitigation letter. You know, it's like it reads the one where, you know, that she's buried with nature is it really feels like if that this is under the premise that this person is the person that I heard. Actually has knowledge or had a hand in it, right? Like, so if it's just somebody making shit up, then it doesn't mean anything. So, but if this is a person that is involved or was involved and they're kind of laying that out there, they're kind of trying to say, look, things went awry. Like I'm trying to tell you right now, this wasn't our intent. This wasn't my intent. This was not something that was planned. This just happened in order to try to soften the blow if and when this is the person or persons that did something, and this person is taken into custody and ultimately charged. Whether or not that's effective, it's bizarre, man.
Does that soften the blow, though?
No.
I mean, does it? I mean, at the end of the day, you took her. She died in your custody. Does that matter one iota to a judge, whether it's murder one, murder two, manslaughter, whatever the hell they charge? Does the fact like, well, but judge, I said it was an accident that she died. That kid doesn't hold any water, right?
I mean, if you put it out there early enough, the defense is certainly going to argue it. The question is whether or not a jury is going to buy it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, because you see it all the time. Like they're always using context clues from all of our social media and our messengers and our text messages, you know, and they're building cases on stuff like that, wherein they're trying to prove intent from what people typed in a text message or said in Messenger. You know what I'm saying? So, mm-hmm. I mean, the defense would argue it. Like they'd say, look, they put it out there early that this wasn't intentional, that the intent wasn't to kill Nancy Guthrie, but ultimately something else happened. And then again, the problem is going to be, have they recovered the body? And once they have recovered the body, is there anything that they could do forensically to determine the cause of death?
Yeah.
You know, so like that's the thing. Like if you have a situation, say you have a situation like your you know, jewel thief gone horribly wrong, and you know they get made in there, and Nancy's about to scream, so they cover her mouth, and they're like, what do we do? And we're like, oh my god, let's just bring her with us. And then they have her with her, and they're like, okay, we're just gonna let her out at McDonald's or whatever, and she dies, you know, of a heart attack.
Yeah,
like, well, like in the middle of the thing, and they're like, oh my god, like what do we do? You know what I mean? Like what do we do? And so, because like, who are they talking to?
Yeah.
Like I had a client that called me up and said, all right, I am actually still in the process of committing this crime. You know, like it was something that went terribly wrong. But at this point, for all intents and purposes, I still have Nancy Guthrie kidnapped. However, here's the thing. She's dead, but we still have her with us. You know what I mean? Like as an attorney, I think ethically I'd be obligated, because it's an ongoing crime, that I'd have to report it.
Yeah.
You know, which is a strange thing. I mean, if I am made aware by my client of a future crime, the privilege does not supersede that.
Sure.
Like,
sure.
If I know that somebody is going to be committing a crime in the future and they've told me when they're going to do it, being a lawyer doesn't mean that you don't alert law enforcement, because you do. Like, so that's like, you know, things that we're talking about for privilege are things that have happened in the past. Right? So like future stuff. So, but I mean, man, it's a weird situation though, isn't it? It's like, you know, I don't know.
If like, it's weird. So time, like things that are weird don't fit to me.
This is something that has been rattling around in my brain. In terms of the notes, because nothing's come of them, right?
Yeah.
Like nothing is, like they make these ransoms, but then they don't show up for the dough when people, you know, it's like when you kind of look at it, if you're in Tony and Robin especially, like if you're looking at this thing and you're like, all right, if you're going to send this thing out and it's not real, who is benefiting the most from doing that? Like currently, like out of anybody in the world or multiple people in the world, who is profiting the most from sending a bogus ransom?
Well, who's ever talking about it, really? So, I mean, if you're the one that's getting the notes, that would be TMZ.
I mean, you know, there's like on a different level. I mean, YouTube has had a lot of coverage too.
Yeah, I mean, because then we all talk about it.
Looking into all of them.
Yeah, but if the source where the notes are going to TMZ, I mean, they're gonna run with it. I mean, it's almost like here's a silver platter of content. Like, You know, either you can pretend it's not real, or maybe it isn't real, or you can play it up like it's something, and everyone's going to click on it regardless.
Crazy to me. Like, yeah. I'm thinking more like content creators. Like, you know what I'm saying? Because like TMZ. I'm just saying it's a theory.
maybe it's a rogue content creator that is sending these out so it creates more to talk about on the case. I mean, it's not a crazy idea, Bob, at all.
It's not a crazy idea.
No.
I don't know. You know, if you're a content creator, you're not going to take the risk of sending it to TMs or to the feds. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not going to send it to law enforcement. Like, to me, when that first started happening, I'm like, all right. Because I'm always thinking of, like, if it's not real, mm-hmm. who's benefiting from it?
Everyone that's promoting it.
True.
I don't know.
There has been more notes. There have been other notes that content creators have gotten that they've never publicized. I know that. I know TMZ has obviously run to the air with all of them, but I know there's others who have. We have not received anything here, but I know other people who have actually received or basically fake ransom letters, or maybe they're real. We don't know what they are, but they're ransom letters. But again, there's so much phishing going on right now, I think, in this, for anybody that will run with it. And somebody out there, I'm guessing, is hoping, a fake person is out there hoping, you know, one of these creators is going to pay me a Bitcoin for their content.
Just making a shit ton of money off this case.
Yeah, that's an interesting angle.
So if you remove one thing, the reason why at the very beginning I was not on board with these letters at all was because it doesn't fit what kidnappers do. It just doesn't, the way they were handled, the way they're delivered, all that. It's a one-off. It's never been done this way before if you're going to do a kidnapping for profit. Nothing fits. Except the one thing that got people believing it was they said there's specific information that's not been shared with the public that said that they had inside knowledge of the house. So we have to take it on the word of the family and Harvey Levin that there is specific information that AI couldn't generate that made this believable. If you remove that one fact that no one knows what the data in that actually is, no one even be paying attention to these letters because they wouldn't be saying they're all spam phishers because it doesn't fit any behavior pattern that anyone has ever been done before. That's why I'm highly skeptical of all the letters from the very beginning, because it just does not fit what people would do. And then let's do our thought experiment again on, all right, so let's assume that the letters are right, or you want to assume the letters are right. You look at Porch Guy. You look at how he dressed. You look at the amount of money he spent and didn't spend on his outfit. Walmart, the lack of covertness of it, although he covered himself really well. It was just it just didn't ring as a true professional, someone with a few reps. So I love Bob's analogy of what probably happened from his context. You know, he goes in there, they go in there because they knew a jewelry thing's in town and they thought there was going to be jewelry, no jewelry. They looked around for 41 minutes, couldn't find any. She wakes up. They say, oh my God, we got to take her. Panic escalation, low percentiles for that, but they do happen. Remove her and then they're going to dump her off at a McDonald's and she dies along the way. The last thing you're going to do then is, oh my God, I'm sorry. If you're so stupid that you have to actually rob someone and take their money because you can't provide a living for yourself another way, the last thing you're thinking of is doing something like that. You're running. You're not communicating. You're dumping bodies and running. That's why, again, every single letter that's come out, if it hadn't been for the one detail that people are saying, a few people that only have knowledge that these things have specific things that only they could do, know about, and not AI, even though I'm a believer of it's one degree of separation, someone knows that house, knows what was inside, knows where Nancy was at. So
what do we know what those things that only the kidnapper
would only know? Conjecture I've heard is that they knew where what she was wearing and where she placed her Apple Watch.
Where is that?
Again, I haven't sourced it. And that's why I'm so skeptical of it. Because if you actually pump into AI, you know, what's an 84-year-old woman typically wear to bed? If she uses this kind of lifestyle, if she wears an Apple Watch, and if they have photos of the house that have been collected over, you know, the last 10 or 20 years from Savannah being in and out and doing things like that, there's a lot of conjecture AI can put together to kind of give you a close enough to do this. I did it with my own family, and I was like, wow, that's some scary shit. So I'm highly skeptical of letters.
pictures of Nancy Guthrie are out in the public sphere in terms of like shit that her daughters have posted, her kids have posted, like on Facebook. I mean,
they did specials with her on the Today Show.
So, like, I mean, does there exist any photographs in the public sphere that
shows
there's an Apple Watch? I don't know, man. She was wearing pajamas. She was wearing a nice flowered set of pajamas.
Exactly. Without knowing the exact verbiage, it's hard to say what weight is on it. Right. You know, if it's like, well, the watch was in a case and the case looked like this and it was on the nightstand. Like, even then, you could still even someone go, well, I saw her on Today's Show and they were in the bedroom and one could make some wild guesses here. I don't know. It's not solid. I'm not saying it's not solid, but there's not enough info in the ether for us lay people to really be able to say, right, yes or no.
That's why I'm still living in the world of maybe on this one.
So much maybe.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, look, but the things that we're talking about, I guarantee you, it's all the stuff they're looking into.
Yeah.
You know, because like the first thing they have to figure out is whether or not the ransom notes are legit. Now, if they do contain things, like to me, it would have to go beyond, you know, like everybody charges their Apple Watch on their nightstand, you know, and it's like, my thing's like right here. I've got my
From what I understand, I believe, and I could be off on this again, because there's so much damn reporting on this. And this is what I heard yesterday when I was on with Nancy Grace. Maureen O'Connell was on with me. And she's the one last week, who retired FBI, who made the statement last week that she was 75% sure that they were on the right track, that there's probably an arrest coming soon, essentially. She said that to Megyn Kelly and made a big story. When we were talking yesterday about this, she had mentioned, if my memory serves me correct, I apologize if it's not, but I'm pretty sure she said this yesterday on the show, that the watch was on the ground. I've heard other people say that too. Again, it's not that specific. It's on the ground. You're charging the watch there. It may be falling on the ground. It's not a crazy thought to think that if there's a struggle getting somebody out of the room, that maybe the Apple Watch fell on the ground. I don't know.
I mean, man.
Yeah, like, I need more than that. I need more than that.
God, that none of that feels like is somebody claiming that was what was in one of the ransom notes, that the Apple Watch was?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I don't know.
Like, it's more specific than just there's an Apple Watch she left behind. But is it as specific as it appears to be? I mean,
is fine, because, all right, so then we assume, so if you wanted to say that those, like they said, the first two are the legit ones because it came from them, it shows that the intent was not to kidnap, and the intent was to go in there and get something else. Because again, if the intent was to get money, there's ways to get money. But they're not doing it.
Could this be a complete one-off, Robin, too? I mean, because we're talking about, like, statistically what people do if they're going to kidnap. If this person's never kidnapped a person in their life, had no intention of kidnapping a person in their life, and this shit all went wrong and she dies in their custody, is it a crazy far stretch to think that maybe if they're an empathetic person that they would send a note saying, we're sorry, she's dead? If that is just, you know, they just don't know what the hell to do. They don't know how to play this game. They've never played this game before. They weren't intending to play the game.
So that makes a lot of sense, because it's not fitting any pattern of kidnappings we've ever seen before. It shows this person has not done this before.
Yeah.
And like you said, and granted, I'm on board with the fact that the BAUs weighed in with Savannah to make that second statement that the family put out, because it's an extremely empathetic statement, which would correspond with the second letter being very empathetic, because you want to do matching, right? Mm-hmm. Emotional matching. It's a powerful tool to compel someone, to inspire someone to take an action. And which would make sense, again, if the intent was not to take her, it was a byproduct of something botched that they did wrong. That makes a lot of sense to me compared to anything else.
Yeah. No one keeps an Apple Watch in a case. I don't even know what that means. I've been wearing an Apple Watch for 5 years.
Oh, not in a case. No, it was on the ground.
Okay. Well, yeah. Oh, wait, what? So wait, Lynn.
Oh, somebody saying a case.
Fell on the ground.
Like, I haven't heard that. I don't know anything about a case.
I don't know what that is.
No.
I like if it's me, if I'm law enforcement, I need something like, okay, you know, if the ransom note said, okay, well, they're on the kitchen table, there was a New York Times crossword puzzle from Tuesday that was half completed. Like that is something. And if that was a fact, then I know that somebody was in that house saying some shit like the Apple Watch was on the floor. I mean, like, unless it's accurate. I mean, I guess if it's accurate,
it could be. Yeah, and we just don't know. That's where it's.
And also, and there's one more thing on the FBI's BAU being involved in responding to those, you know, working with Savannah to respond empathetically. Just because they crafted a response doesn't mean they thought it was legit.
True.
They could have been very 50-50 on this. Again, we don't know because we haven't heard from them. We'll never hear from them. But I mean, I would do that because if you're going, remember, we said it yesterday on the show. I say it all the time. In the world that I lived in, all intelligence is good intelligence, even if it rules something out. And so if you took an action because you believed it to be legit and you put an empathetic statement out there that should garner a response you're looking for, if it doesn't garner the response you're looking for, that's intelligence you can now move on. Because now it's saying that this might not be as legit as we thought it was because we didn't get the response we should have gotten from this empathetic statement that Savannah put out.
Yeah,
that's
nothing to lose.
Might not do it. If you guys are, if we're going with the bungling, you know, the bungling jewel thief theory, and you know, and she passes away for natural causes because of the stress.
She's 84.
Right. I mean, it's like she's horrified. Right. I mean, you're in the desert, man.
Yeah.
You know, like to me, this thing, like I don't know. Is Othram handling the?
Yeah.
Are they handling, like, you know, and like everybody knows me, knows I'm a huge fan of that lab. And, you know, if they're going to be able to pull a profile off of it, then if anybody is, it's going to be them. To me, I just don't think this is going to be a case that's going to get solved through forensic evidence. I think it's going to be somebody's going to talk. That's where I'm at with this thing, because the one thing that I know for certain is that there had to have been more than one person involved. I think that if you're going in on a jewel heist, I mean, is that to say that there don't exist like individual guys that go in and, you know, are jewel thieves? I'm sure there are. I think most of the times you're going to have a couple of guys, you know, you're going to have a little bit of a crew because of the unknowns, you know, and if you've got multiple people involved and if you have somebody who had to go out to the desert somewhere and, you know, bury Nancy's body somewhere out in the desert where no one's ever going to find it, you know, the odds are that at some point somebody knows something, and the question then becomes, when is that person going to talk?
You know, time will tell.
So time will tell. Yeah. Bungling jewelers typically 1-2 tops, and typically it's person that's very close to the first person. So there's no compromise on that. So it's kind of 50-50 on whether they speak or not after a period of time.
Yeah. Time will tell. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to weigh in. The links are in the description.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at chumbacasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21+. Terms and conditions apply.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car looked in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at chumbacasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21+. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? they're also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car looked in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.